Hey there, Jonathan Doyle with you once again for the weekly podcast. Good to have the pleasure of your company. If you're joining me for the first time, welcome aboard. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. You could be listening to this at any time. It's actually Easter as I record it. So a very Merry Easter to you, or a very Happy Easter to you, wherever you are listening in the world. Great time of year, great time to have some time with family and to try and avoid eating enormous amounts of chocolate. I'm going to put my hand up and say I failed miserably. Yesterday, just about every rule I've ever advocated in every post or podcast or book that I've written went straight out the window when confronted with caramel-filled Easter eggs. So please, if I do a podcast on avoiding Easter eggs, don't listen to it because I really have absolutely no credibility whatsoever. But you know, perhaps there is a podcast in resisting temptation that I could do some serious research on because I think I really need to hear that myself. But all right, let's rip in. I've been reading a really cool book by a guy called Dr. Bill Tierfelder, who's, it could be Tierfelder. So Dr. Bill, if you're listening to this, apologies for the mispronunciation. I had a crack at two options there. But Dr. Bill's book's really interesting. I'm going to put a link here, as I often do, underneath, so you can go and get yourself a copy. I really want to be supportive of anybody that I mention in the podcast. So Dr. Bill's book is called Less Than 1 Minute to Go. Less Than 1 Minute to Go. And he's had a fascinating background in sports psychology. He was an Olympic athlete in high jump, which is interesting, right? Because high jump for me would be the kind of sport I would least likely ever do on the planet. I mean, I could seriously see myself doing ballet or underwater synchronized swimming or something long before I could do high jump. Why? Because God didn't bless me with the genetics for high jump. At my sort of 5'10" or 5'9", I'm not exactly going to be jumping up there, but Dr. Bill was at a very high level and then went into coaching and obviously did a lot of study and has coached a lot of NFL, American football players, basketball players, golfers, and I love the book. Why? Because he talks about golf. And if you're a regular listener, you know I'm a golf tragic, and I have actually put some of his ideas into play. And I can tell you they actually work, because it's amazing when you read a book and then you use the ideas and they work. And I hope for the people who are listening who bought my book, Bridging the Gap, and if you haven't, go and buy a copy now. It's at the link at the bottom. Putting those ideas into practice, they actually work. And it's very cool. So for me to read his book and go and do something he said and see it work was a real testimony. And I, you know, because of that, I have no trouble kind of advocating and promoting his book to you. But I want to share with you an insight that I gained from him yesterday, which I think's really, really useful. And it ties into some stuff that I'm often thinking about and often sharing. And it starts with this. He paints a kind of thought experiment. I want you to try and think about this. I want you to imagine you're standing in like an indoor baseball stadium. Basketball. You're on a basketball court. And imagine you get two like electrical tape and you tape off 100 meters. And, you know, it's just a long straight line of tape, 100 meters long down this basketball court. Now, please don't email me if basketball courts aren't 100 meters long. I've got no idea how long they are, but let's just agree for the sake of today that this basketball court is 100 meters long and you've taped a line of black tape all the way down. And then you take about two paces and you tape another parallel line all the way down. So you've got two black lines down this court. They're identical. And the gap in the middle is maybe about a meter or sort of 2 meters, even 2 meters wide. Okay, it's a nice long, wide gap down the middle. Now, at the far end, we're going to say there's a $10 note. And I'm going to say to you, right, you're standing at one end. I just want you to walk down there and pick up that $10 note. It's a 100-meter walk. At the end of your 100 meters, there is a $10 bill. And all you got to do is walk down there and pick it up on the basketball court. And you got to stay in between those two black lines. So, no problem, right? You just happily walk down there, pick up your $100 bill, and off you go. So let's now put this thought experiment to the next level. So let's say we take the exact same 100 meter distance, and it's just as wide, it's sort of, you know, a meter and a half or meter or 2 meters wide. But what we're going to do is we're going to suspend it as a walkway between two buildings more than 100 stories off the ground. So there we are, you know, literally 100 stories off the ground, nothing underneath except free fall, and we're going to put a $10 bill at the other end, and we're going to say to you, walk from one building just across this channel to the other and get the $10 bill. Now, of course, you can immediately see the huge implications. Now, I could say to you, look, why don't you put $100 at the other end, or $1,000, if I said to you $1,000 cash. All you have to do is walk across that channel that you just walked across moments ago with absolutely no problem. And I think unless you are a world-famous trapeze artist or tightrope walker, you're going to find that a little problematic. And we could ramp it up. I mean, eventually we're probably going to get to a figure where you will begin to entertain maybe the idea of doing it. But all that's doing is sort of changing the experiment. It's saying at what point is there so much leverage that you would risk anything. But if we keep it back to that, you know, $100 mark, you're going to find it really hard to do. Why? Because all of a sudden your brain is going to be thinking about a whole bunch of very reasonable things, isn't it? I mean, what are those reasonable things? Number one is your imminent death. You know, one gust of wind or you just freak out. Imagine you get halfway across and you just lock up and you're just terrified. And that's it. And you can't go a step further. Or what if, you know, this or the bridge sways or something happens. Now, the reason it's sort of Dr. Bill is suggesting here, the key difference, it's really interesting to think about what the key difference really is, and it's simply your focus. When we say walk across the basketball court, your focus really is simply on the money at the end. You're not thinking about anything else, you're just walking across and your attention is simply on that end goal. It's very simple, it's very uncluttered. But once you're suspended 100 stories off the ground, your brain is suddenly focused on a huge number of variables. Now, you might be focusing on family relationships and what if you died and will your kids be looked after or your spouse or your boyfriend or girlfriend or what if, you know, what if just the horror of falling 100 stories and your brain, your focus is all of a sudden fragmented across this whole spectrum of different inputs. So then reaching the goal becomes enormously problematic because the attention is fragmented and the focus is fragmented. So I found that a really powerful experiment, a really powerful thought experiment, to realize that on one level, you're not doing anything different. You're doing exactly the same thing. You're walking a 100 meter distance. But if you introduce a single variable, then your focus can be massively affected. And once the focus is affected, then the outcome's affected. So what I want to do in the rest of this time in this podcast is really talk about the focus issue and about where we're focused in life and how we can use this idea to get leverage on ourselves to be more focused. So here's what he says, and this is a direct quote from the book. He says, the key, I want you to hear this, and this is a guy who's worked with elite athletes all over the world. He says, the key is to know what it is that you want to focus on and then put your entire 100% of attention on those things. The key is to know what it is that you want to focus on and put your entire 100% of attention on those things. So this becomes a bit of a theory for him, and I'm going to give you a link to his website because he does a video there on golf, which I found incredibly helpful. I actually put this into practice on the weekend and it was brilliant. And basically he goes, you know, often in golf, and if you're not a golfer, just bear with me for a second, but often in golf you're standing there, and I know this to be true, you're thinking about 100 things. You're thinking about where's my hips position and what's my shoulders doing and where's the club at impact and where's and what's the wind doing, all this different stuff. And your attention, of course, is incredibly fragmented. So what he's saying is you pick a spot on the ball, like a speck of dust or a dimple on the ball or a letter in the logo, and you drill down and you block everything out except that tiny point of focus, and then you take your swing. I mean, you're not going to fix your swing in a single go. You got your swing, so it's there, but you lock that focus and attention in. I started to do that just over the weekend and noticed, honestly, I'm not making this up, I noticed a very significant difference. And after I get out of the studio today, I'm going back out the golf course, friends, to work seriously on this because I think it really works. And it's exciting to share with you ideas that really do work. So he offers us another quote where he says, thinking about the consequences of failure or even of success instead of the action often leads to the very outcome you hoped to avoid. So you can see what he's trying to say here is that the minute we begin to focus more on the outcome, whether that's, you know, we worried about failure or worried about, you know, we're calculating the success, the less likely we are to really sort of see and be focused upon the outcome in the moment. Now, I know this to be true, and that's why I love talking about this stuff, because I've seen it in practice. You know, again, indulge me on a golfing story, but playing a lot of golf, so many times, and this will be my default position, is that I'll start a round of golf and my focus will be on where I finish in terms of handicaps. I might be just playing by myself, but I'll be thinking, right, I'm on the first hole, but I'm thinking about where I want to finish, you know, on the 18th, what I want my score to be. And on one level, you go, well, isn't that the whole point? You're goal-focused, you know what the outcome is at the end. And I go, yeah, but the problem is, especially according to, you know, Dr. Bill's theory here, is that once you focus too much on that outcome, whether it's going to be a good one or a bad one, then you stop focusing on the task right in front of you. So there's a kind of balance here. But my experience, at least in the golfing metaphor, would be that you've got to be much more focused on what's right in front of you. When you're really in the midst of performance, whether that's, you know, business or you're in a relationship and you've really got to work on an issue or you're parenting, sometimes, you know, that's a good idea. Let's talk about parenting. You know, if as a parent you're overly focused on exactly how they must turn out in 15 years' time, as opposed to dealing with the issue that's happening with them right in front of you now, you can see how it's a tension there. You've got to get that balance right. But I think what I want to suggest in this podcast is that we need to be a little bit more focused on what's right in front of us and pay more attention to executing at a high level the work that's right in front of us. You know, why? Well, because we're an incredibly fragmented society. You think about the impact of Twitter and so much social media, and you think how it's possible just to sit on a couch and to be watching a commercial TV program while at the same time, you know, looking up a holiday destination on your iPad while looking at Instagram on your iPhone. So you have three media formats coming at you at the same time. So we're increasingly trained to fragment our attention and focus. It's a major sort of, you know, cultural, anthropological change. It's really seismic. You know, I've talked before about Nicholas Carr's book, The Shallows. You know, the tagline is what the internet is doing to our brains. So we're getting more and more fragmented and focused, which means I think if you want to create something great, if you want to create great art or really put out great work in your career, I think what we're going to have to start doing is really focusing a lot more on focus. Focusing on focus, focusing on attention, focusing on drilling down and really doing what's right in front of us and doing that part well. And I can so put my hand up and relate to this because, you know, I've got a lot of things on my plate, you know, a lot of different business things and family and a whole bunch of stuff that makes up a complex life. And I am becoming increasingly aware of the need to, whatever I'm doing, do that. You know, and in previous podcasts, I've talked about this myth of multitasking. Our brains are just fundamentally not set up for multitasking. We actually have evolved to really drill down on one or two key things at a time. You know, think about, you know, when we first came out of caves, you'd be pretty much focused on a couple of basics every day. You know, was that saber-toothed tiger going to attack? What's happening in the village? What's the other tribe doing? We drill down to two or three major things. And often we were just focused on what was right in front of us. And, you know, think of the examples of things like, the Sistine Chapel. Think of the great works of art or some of the great movements in history have been because people drilled down and really suffered for their art and paid attention and focus and poured themselves with great concentration into creating change. Now, some of you may not agree, but a lot of our modern art, you know, if you want to throw a bucket of paint at a canvas, is very different. And I'm sure I'm going to be seen as ignorant here, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but, you know, you see some of the world's greatest art. You know, I was in London a few weeks ago, and this is a great self-portrait of Rembrandt in the National Gallery in Trafalgar Square. And you just go, how does anybody do something so extraordinary? I mean, you know, Rembrandt wasn't sitting there updating his social feeds half the time. I mean, he was obviously learning an art and, you know, apprenticing and focusing and being diligent. So what I want to say is, okay, let's say some of this is true, that, you know, our issue in creating great work in our careers or, you know, better outcomes in our relationships or a deeper spiritual connection. I think what we need to do is start to create environments that are conducive to it. So it's one thing to switch on and pay attention to go, yep, I've got to be focused. But there's so much distraction around us that the takeaway I want to give you this week is to, again, to think about environment. I've got a kind of mantra which is that goes like this: place equals performance. Place equals performance. If you want to have a great relationship, say with your spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend, then sure, you can have, you know, conversations in the kitchen over a cup of coffee, whatever, but you know, don't you have your best conversations when you go out and you put time aside and you have an awesome meal together and you really sit down and the music's there and the ambience and there's no interruptions? And you know, I'd like to say you're not checking your phones half the time, but go to a normal restaurant these days and that's not true either. It's crazy. Everyone's sitting there having these deep and meaningful romantic dinners, checking their phones every 5 seconds. But you know what I mean? Like the ability to kind of, you know, if you want to have intimacy, you go to a place that's conducive to it. You know, I pray best and I sort of read and reflect best if I'm sitting in a church. You know, so sometimes, you know, where do you do weights best? In a gym. You know, where do you, I'm real big on this, that sometimes you've got to get yourself in the environment that's most conducive to the outcome. And if you go, well, in my job, I can't just go somewhere else. Well, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of flexibility in our workplaces these days. But if you can't necessarily go to a key place, then at least get very diligent about the distractions around you. You know, what can you do to alleviate distractions? You know, are there places you can go? You know, I love my kids and I love working around the house when I'm here sometimes, but I can't get a lot done. Often I do my best work in cafes. A lot of people say that. Or airport lounges or hotel rooms. I mean, I do my best work in hotel rooms. Grab a club sandwich, get a coffee, sit inside there, close the doors, and I just crank in there because there's no distractions and interruptions. So I think, you know, really what I want to do this week is encourage you to start creating great art in your work. Have you thought about that, like in your career, you know, or in your relationships? Are you creating great stuff, great outcomes, great art in what you're doing? I mean, imagine that as an idea. If you could begin to create really amazing, you know, quality stuff just by being more focused, by removing those things that fragment your focus and beginning to drill down on what really matters. You know, I'll give you another example. I've got, you know, I'm speaking less these days. I'm sort of, you know, having a season where I'm writing more and working on other projects. And I mean, I'm still traveling and speaking quite a bit. But I've got two coming up recently. And I was thinking, oh yeah, I better get my stuff out and look what I did last year and what did I speak about. But then I suddenly thought, you know what? Why don't I do the best job I've ever done? The paradigm, you know, why don't I just really bring my A game? You know, and I go, well, I do so much speaking, you know, I can't do all the time, but maybe I can. Maybe part of being a speaker is about, you know, treating it like art and going, you know what, I'm going to give these people my best. Now, there's some great books that I want to read about, you know, speaking and performance, and I'm going to read those, and there's some research that I need to do. I've got a speaking engagement coming up with a couple of thousand people, and I'm convicted that when I walk in there, this is going to be the best speech I've ever done. You know, 300,000 plus people that I've done seminars with, I want this one to be my best. Why? Because I just want it to be. I just want to go in there and give an absolute cracker. Because, you know, sometimes life's just better when you do that. But to do that, I've got to get focus. So I've got to create environments over these next 2 or 3 weeks where I'm concentrating, where there's no distractions, where I'm really learning and focusing and drilling down so that I can bring my best. So that's my encouragement to you this week. You know, what are you best at? And where is fragmentation stealing your ability to give of your best to other people? You know, you're not going to get a second chance at this life. And the skills that you have, there's capacities that you have that no one else has in your particular mix. So why not do them amazingly? Why not just bring your A game to whatever it is in life, whether it's, you know, you're a chairman of a board or a chairwoman of a board or a chairperson of a board, or you're leading a family, or you're, you know, you're a principal at a school, or you're studying at university, whatever it is, bring your best to it. And to do that, you're going to need focus. And to have focus, you're going to have to get the right environment and you're going to have to remove distractions. So I want you to think about those things. I'll put a few notes in here. Hopefully there'll be a transcript in a day or so. You can read through this. But summary, focus is under threat. So much fragmentation, but your best work comes from your best focus and your best concentration. And to do that, you've got to get the environment right and remove distractions. So that's it for this week. If you haven't done it yet and you're listening to this, grab a copy of my new book, Bridging the Gap. There'll be a link under here you can find on the website. If you're on iTunes listening to this, come across to jonathandoyle.co and grab a copy of Bridging the Gap. It's a really short read with 7 very simple ideas that I think you're going to love. If you'd like me to come and speak at your business or your conference, then send me an email and we can really shape some content that's going to be really useful to you. I'm Jonathan Doyle. I've loved doing this. I hope you can hear that in my voice. Send me an email. Post a comment under here, but grab the link and share it with people. I'd love that. Come across and follow on Twitter or share it with your social feeds. I love sharing this stuff with people. It's been a real privilege to have this time talking with you. I hope it's been useful. I'm Jonathan Doyle. I'll be talking with you again next week.